one thing we didn't mention, did you notice this week there's a homework assignment I put up?
Yeah.
You might want to note.
Let's be proud of
it. It's easy. It's you turn it in next week. And what it is an allergy assessment. What are allergies? Allergies are inflammation, right? Major inflammation. So you're going to do a little allergy assessment. I don't think you'll have too much trouble finding someone who has an allergy, will you? No, probably not. If you do, you can come talk to me. You may use yourself. Yeah, yourself can be a fine candidate. You can certainly use yourselves. Now, unlike most of this class, this lecture, I didn't like the one that came in this version of our text, so I'm actually using the same author, but an older version of this lecture. Because I like it.
I have a question. For the ATI stuff, why are you using the earlier version instead of the newer one?
Oh, only because that happened to be the hard copy I have. You may use anything you like.
Because they don't have the same stuff.
Yeah, and who knows when you get there and take yours, what the version you're going to be working with is going to have in it. Because you're not going to be taking the MedSurg ATI for, a year and a half. So I'm sure we'll have at least one more version out before then. So what I really want to do, Joe, is just kind of get you used to using the ATI, kind of looking at it, relating whatever you're doing in all your classes to the ATI, so that when it comes time to take that test, you'll have some familiarity. But, oh, yeah, and be able to link it back to a question. That's my goal, is to kind of expose you to it rather than specifically study it. I did look over the chapters, so I thought I told you, but you're right. Okay, immune system. Remember the immune system? Right? What does it do? What is it? What makes up the immune system? Remember? What? Blood cells? Blood, bone marrow, right?
Thyroid.
Really? No. Thalamus, you're thinking.
Oh, I'm thinking endocrine. Sorry.
You're thinking thalamus. Yeah. Well, good thing we're reviewing here. Maybe let me go over this a little bit more than I had planned. Okay, the immune system is what protects the body. Okay, from potentially harmful substances such as all this list. Okay? Now, it protects from antigens. Antigens are large molecules. They're usually proteins. Okay? And they're on the surface of cells, viruses, fungi, bacteria, some living things, toxins. Okay? Substances that contain these antigens are recognized and destroyed by our immune system. Okay? So that's what it does. Your own body cells have proteins that are antigens. And your immune system sees these antigens as normal and doesn't react to them generally. But if a foreign antigen comes in, your body sees it as foreign and reacts. Okay? But we have nice barriers. We have a whole system of protection. Like sneezing, like stomach acid, right? Mm-hmm. But stomach acid is great. You may go and eat the same, which happened to me last couple weeks ago. Girlfriend and I went out for lunch. We both had the same thing. She got horrible food poisoning and I was fine. My stomach acids were stronger than her stomach acids. Okay? I fought better. Right? I wasn't as worn down. Who knows? I had good stomach acids that killed those bacteria that we both ate. Maybe she ate, her food might have had more of it. And she got sick and I didn't. Okay. What else? We've got stomach acids. What else do we have? What other?
Our skin.
Skin. Absolutely. Your skin's a great defense. Now keep that in mind when you're in the hospital. If you've got a cut on your hand, you are opening yourself up to all those germs that are flowing around you. When I have a cut on my hand, I'm very, very careful about wearing gloves when I'm working with patients. Very careful. For my own protection. Yes.
Do they include earwax, mucus,
sure.
Tears?
Earwax, mucus, tears, all of the above. Yeah, coughing? Yes, absolutely. Skin oils? These are all barriers. We've got good barriers. Vaginal fluid? We've got good barriers to protect our body, usually. But how do we keep those barriers strong? We're careful about keeping our skin intact, right? Yeah, please be careful of your hands. Try to protect it. If you're out gardening, wear gloves. You know, do, because your hands are really important. And it's very important that you maintain the barrier that your skin gives you. I mean, take care of your nails. Don't get hangnails and don't rip at your fingers. Keep good care of your hands. It's very important to practice. Likewise, your patients. As they age, what's happening to their skin? It's becoming more and more fragile, right? You'll see people that even now, if I take my big heavy book bag and carry it right here, I break the vessels. I have like all these broken vessels right here because my skin's thinning. All right, and you will see patients with paper thin skin. If you break that skin barrier, you're exposing it to infection. And these are often our most fragile patients. So you take care. That's how you prevent infection in your patients. So we've got, just to go back to the immune system, what have we got? We've got bone marrow, all right? From there, the cells of the blood cells of our immune system are grown. The lymph nodes, remember lymph nodes? Two circulatory systems, the lymph system and the blood system, right? They're pretty much with each other. Lymph runs throughout our body. Lymph nodes are where the lymph can kind of mass to fight an infection. And in the lymph are all the cells that truly do fight infection, most of them. Okay, so the whole lymphatic system, the spleen. Spleen's a filter, right? It helps. Thalamus produces mature T cells. Okay, so it's important as well. All right? So that's just a tatter review. But no, now back to antigens. Don't limit yourself. They can be viruses, bacteria, fungi. Yeah, we have fungal infections. You bet. Toxins, chemicals, fluorine particles. So you a splinter. Okay? Can be a problem. So here are all our stuff that we remember, the parts of the immune system. They're all important. So the immune response is recognition. Okay, what happens first? Hold on, let me make sure. Okay, so they recognize, right? Recognition. The antigen is recognized by the lymphocytes. It's the first thing. Hopefully this is kind of a review. And that triggers the next stage. This is the immune system's body's way of defending itself against foreign objects that invade and can cause infection or disease. Okay, so the first step is recognition. The antigen triggers a response. Right? And generally that's at the side of the lymph nodes. And it tells the body that the next stage is to release antibodies to fight the antigen. This is proliferation. Now, you saw my little handout, right? Did anybody print it out that we can show? Nobody printed it. Yeah! This has been such an unfair custom. We gave you a whole page on it. Since you were so good to connect, you read it, you're in classmates, so I don't want you to get these things confused.
Let's say clear on antigens again. According to the World Medical Dictionary, my personal reference of choice, antigen is any substances which is capable under appropriate conditions of including the formation of antibodies and of reacting specifically to some detectable matter with antibodies, so is flu.
Okay, so antigens are what invade the body. They cause the body to form antibodies. Got that? Okay, moving on.
Antibody is an immunoglobulin-like IgG, IgE, etc. molecule that has specific amino acid sequences by virtue of which it interacts only with the antigen that induces these symptoms in the lymph tissues or with antigen related to it.
Okay, so the antigen causes the body to make the antibodies that are the defense mechanisms against that antigen. I want you to know the difference between antigens and antibodies. That's important. And so think way back, and you know, hopefully you had a little bit of microbiome. and then some of this. All right? So, in the proliferation phase, that's when the antibodies are released to fight the antigen. Okay? We move on to the response, and there's a couple different responses. Cellular responses are humoral and cellular responses. I'm not going to go into the differences between those, so relax. Your book goes on for pages. I'm not going to ask you the difference between those two. If you get into any kind of molecular science, then you'll need to know. But for your general practice in nursing, I can count enough to learn. Okay? But I do want you to know that that's the stage where the antibodies respond and attach to the antigen. Okay? Now the antibodies are attaching to the antigen. Okay? The effector stage is when they're globbing on, they're coupled, they're one with the antigen, and now they're going to hopefully overpower. Okay? So the response is when they get to it and they attach. Effector is when they start affecting it. And hopefully they're killing it. Hopefully there are enough antibodies that have built up that they can fight any infection that comes into a body, like me and the food poisoning, and like my friend who got deathly sick. Okay. I was strong enough. My body was strong enough. I had the antigen to react, to not get sick, okay, to fight that. And so I had a subclinical infection. What's a subclinical infection? I had no signs of symptoms. Most of us walk around with subclinical infections all the time. You're strong, right? Your bodies are fighting. You have all these people who haven't met come all over, sitting next to you, breathing on you, you know, coughing on you, right? Giving you all their antigens. Okay, that your body's not used to, it's okay, you're strong. You're fighting them off. Your antibodies are working. You're making antibodies, it's working, you don't even know it. But we're going to go on and say what happens when you're not that strong. Right. So some of us are immune to some of these antibodies, huh? Right? So these are all natural, passive, and innate immunities are the same. Acquired and adaptive immunity are the same. So these words all mean the same things, and you'll see them all used. So let's start with a natural or passive immunity. That's when the body does no work to get that immunity. So a passive immunity involves antibodies that are produced in someone else's body other than your own. That's a good example of this. Breast milk. Exactly. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. A baby gets antibodies that are made in its mom's body. Okay. Some vaccination done. Right. Sometimes we're given antibodies. Immunoglobulin, we're given antibodies. Made somewhere else. Okay. Yeah. Gamma globulin is another form. Acquired immunity. See, the words are really weird. You would think it was the other way around. Acquired immunity means your body does some work. Your body acquires it. In comparison to natural immunity, innate or passive acquired or adaptive immunity develops when the body is internally exposed to various antigens and builds a defense. So it's a defense you have against the antigen that just came in from your prison sitting next to you this weekend. You got a cold this weekend, pushing when they visited the book. Who is the antibody? So even though she's subclinical, she sees on you with those antigens from a boyfriend that you never saw before, but your body's healthy. And you're making antibodies, and you're doing it. Got it? Got those two differences? There are people with some immunodeficiencies. This can be genetic disorders, or it can be because of their disease state. Immunodeficiencies are disorders clinically that result in an impaired immune system or in the inflammatory response. So remember we learned what inevitable means?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Versus genetic. Congenital, which is actually generally genetic, but since we haven't decided on exactly what gene, we can't say that, so we call it congenital. It's known as primary immunodeficiency, and it's believed to be caused by genetic immunology. So this is someone who's born with a suppressed immune system. They don't have the ability, they never will have the ability genetically, they need things to defend. They don't have the ability to defend. This is like the boy in the bubble. Okay, this is not amazing. This is like a failure point. Congenital immunity versus acquired immune deficiency. So someone that has AIDS has an acquired immune deficiency. Who else would have an acquired immune deficiency? Yeah, perfect. Someone taking chemo. Yeah, absolutely. You guys coming into the semester, and you're not sleeping and not eating and not exercising. Probably will have, could very well have an acquired immune deficiency. But not you, because you're going to be taking good care of yourself. Right? But if you don't take good care of yourself, so it's in the semester, you're going to get sick, and you're going to get this horrible bronchitis popping thing that, you know, goes down the whole time. Because you're not sleeping, you're not eating well. You're going to have to help you take care of your bodies, if your immune system's not there. Who else is going to be susceptible to an acquired immune deficiency?
Yes.
An AIDS patient? Definitely. Yeah, very possibly, because there's a lot of inflammation going on. Their bodies are fighting other things. And then people simply that have surgeries, people that are fighting diseases, people that are old. Because where are all these defenses going? They're going to fight the disease. You know? And so then they make that pneumonia, because all their energy is going to fight to respond to the surgery. And the bacteria that's happening then. So think about your patients and how strong they are. If they're fighting another disease, chances are they're not going strong. A surgeon took out a little, my friend is a surgeon, took out a little, it was a cyst on my son's face. My son is a professional skateboard racer. He's constantly banged up. He constantly is healing himself. And I was real concerned because I knew he wasn't going to take care of it. And the student says, don't worry, he'll heal really fast. His body is in such healing mode that he's so used to it, he won't have any problem. He has an excellent immune system. Great defenses. And sure enough, you know, last time I saw him, he didn't see this one. Your hospital patients are not going to be like that. Right? They're going to be good immune deficient. And so you have to remember this, address it, speak to it. It's a great teaching thing, too. Now, you need to worry. You may think that there's a serious problem, a genetic problem, or truly something that's not just based on a disease in a child that has 6 to 12 infections a year. Okay? And these aren't just runny noses. These are like unusual infections. You know, if it's severe, this is bronchitis. This is bad infections. Or an adult, 2 to 4. But again, not just a cold, something that's unusual. If you get pneumonia, if you get something that's odd, something different, something that you can't trace. At least don't worry about it. So congenital, yeah, they're I don't know if I can want to say always, but they're generally genetic. And acquired, what about somebody with a nutritional deficit? Yeah, they're like we talked about you guys. You're not eating well towards the end of the semester. Definitely. That's going to have an effect on the immune function of your body. Calories, proteins, vitamins, if you don't have all the tools, you're not going to be able to fight. And we do albumin tests. You see lab tests, I'll say albumin. We're testing protein. If your patient doesn't have a good albumin level, they're not going to have the protein necessary to heal from surgery. This is the kind of thing, again, we step in and say, you know, are you eating well? Or post, when they go home, I always say, no, eat a lot of protein. Make sure you have good, balanced diet. You might want to start taking a multivitamin if you're not. Because you need all the components of healing to be there together to make it work. Okay? So it's very important to talk about any nutritional deficits. Iatrogenic infections, we've talked about that last time, right? We know that they exist in the hospital. Certainly trauma, cuts, bruises, all this, yes. We talked a little bit about AIDS. You're going to get a lot about AIDS next semester. What about stress? When you went to Professor Miss T's lecture, she talked about stress, right? Stress can absolutely impact the immune system. I've done a lot of work with breast cancer patients, and it just seems like they so often get breast cancer when they've had a stressful situation. Their husband had cancer. They lost a child. And I would love to see some real hard data on that, but anecdotally, I've seen a lot of correlation between cancers and stress. And yeah, how do you feel when you're real stressed? Feel very strong? No, you get sick? Yeah. Right? Start watching yourself. There's a correlation between stress and illness. Absolutely, even in yourselves. So keep a nice, mellow level this semester. Don't get overstressed. Keep your immune system strong. You will be doing an assessment, of course, part of your health history when you're working with your patients. You'll be able to assess how their immune system, how healthy is it. Take a health history, what disorders and disease do they have? Any autoimmune disorders? That's when the body is recognizing something that should be normal as a disease. And it's fighting against itself. Neuroplastic disease, so cancers, blood transfusions. What about lifestyles? Do they smoke? What's smoking doing to your immune system? It's taking all the cilia in your nose for starters, right? What's it doing to the mucus production? What's it doing to the lung capacity? How can you can't cough? I mean, that's... What about drugs, drinking? What are you exposing yourself to? So think about all that. When you look at your patients, take a good look at the skin. Look at the mucous membranes. Have that as part of your physical assessment, as well as when you're talking to them. So think about how... what potential they have to become infected. And here they are sitting in the hospital, you know. You want to keep them as infection-free as possible, as healthy as possible. People with chronic illness, diabetes, heart disease, lung disease, they're constantly at risk because they don't have the strength that you do to fight. Lymph nodes, problems with lymph nodes, problem with joints, any other, anything. Any special problems will lead to a decreased ability to fight, a decreased immune system. You're going to see some tests and studies. Okay. Leukocytes, lymphocyte tests, all these tests, you may see them in the charts. And that's a test of the immune function. So you might look for those. I'm not going to ask anything about these tests. Right? Just as you're in the hospital looking at them, you might want to look them up and see exactly what they are, but know that they're tests for immune function and AIDS tests. We commonly see those in hospitals, so you know what you're looking at. You see any of those are common AIDS tests. We're going to do our assessments on these people, right? We're going to assess. We want to know what we're looking at. We teach them, help them with their skin that's fragile. You know, encourage them to wear gloves. Don't bang your arm. I need to stop carrying this heavy bag right here. If I put it on my shoulder, I wouldn't break down the tissue right here, and I would be stronger. Okay. Teach them to eat well and why. They're leaving after surgery. They need good nutrition. If they've had a trauma, a wound, they need to eat. What supportive care do they have? Who's around them? Are you taking your vitamins? Does your daughter come by and take you shopping? All right, those are all things that you need to discuss. Do you get out and walk in there? We read a recent study about people that own dogs are much more physically active than people who don't because they take the dog for a walk. So you might suggest a dog, you know? You'll get out and exercise the dog. You'll have a reason. Okay? So that's all the kind of thing that we can say as nurses. Acute inflammation, what's the difference between acute and chronic? We talked about that a little bit last time. This definition is acute. It resolves within 24 hours. You're seeing some resolution. Within 48 hours, you're seeing some resolution. And with acute illnesses, you know that's usually the case. You've got a cold, you've got something you're seeing, you're getting better, usually. So you see some resolution. Within 48 hours in the acute phase, followed by activity of the lymph nodes, which is involved in the drainage of the excess fluid, you get the microphage migration from the site, and you start seeing some tissue repair. Start seeing it. Now, chronic is when the antigen persists. So you know that great commercial for Mucinex, right? Where the bug gets down there and makes itself all cozy? That's actually how I think about it. If those bugs can get down there and colonize, and you don't have anything to fight them, they're going to colonize and keep growing. And they're going to grow really rapidly. And if you can't fight them, they're going to overcome the immune system. If you don't have all the defenses, they're ready to fight. Okay? And they're going to take over. They're going to get real cozy, like that little germ in the Mucinex commercial. But if you can stop them right away, if you have a good immune system, if you can start antibiotics, right? are antifungal, antivirals. You're going to stop them before they get huge and become a great problem. So this is what you do for your patients. You want to pick up that UTI right away. You don't want to wait until, and you see a little cloudy urine, send it to the lab. You're the one that's going to take that cloudy urine and say, yeah, no symptoms yet. Great, let's catch it before it's symptomatic. That's what a nurse does. You're coughing a little, huh? Let's get a sputum sample, see if there's any germs. See what's going on. Okay, and this is a nursing call. And then you call the doc, say, hey, I got a sputum sample. They'll love you. See, fantastic. Great, let's catch it before it becomes a problem. All right, so we want you to constantly be watching your patients. So a chronic illness is a persistent antigen. It doesn't go away. Accumulation of the antigen-producing cells. So now the antigen's in your body, and it's growing. It's multiplying fast. But you want to catch them quick. There's tissue destruction. And this is usually different than acute inflammation. This is getting sick. You don't want that to happen. Talk a little bit about inflammation. These are my Greek guys. All right. Five are they Roman? I guess they're Roman, aren't they? There are five basic symptoms of inflammation. These are my guys. All right. You got redness, heat. You have pain. Is that my pain guy? No, that's not right. You have redness. Heat. You have this is a swelling guy. This is the heat. This is the redness guy. This is the pain. And this is the loss of function. Okay, so remember my guys. There are five of them. You need to remember those five signs of inflammation. Okay? Because you're going to get inflammation as a response to infection. That's another thing. I should write another whole handout on that. Inflammation is a response to an infection. Or an antigen coming in. Allergies are an inflammatory response gone bad. Okay. So if you have your patient going home with a wound, you're going to have them watch for heat, redness, swelling, pain, and loss of function. Sometimes we think of this as mental loss of function. Or obviously if you can't move it on. Okay. So let me tell you a little bit about cellularly what's going on. Heat, fever, right? Sometimes when it's red, you can feel the heat of an infection. Okay? You can actually feel it. And if you haven't had this experience, when you see a patient that has an infection of some sort, touch it. It's warm. It actually is warm. Also, the whole body has a fever at times. But even if we're controlling the fever, maybe you're going to feel it warm around that infected area. It's very interesting. So fever, or heat, calor, all right, the Greek word, is a result of an increased blood flow and cellular metabolism. That makes all sorts of sense, right? This is the area where there's a problem. You can have increased blood flow to that area because the body's fighting, and so that's the inflammatory response. Cells are creating more energy. They're creating heat. And that's a result of increase in the temperature right there. That's different than a fever. This is the body temperature right where the source of the inflammation is. Okay? You can feel it warm. And that's because the cells are there. And they're moving fast. And they're creating energy. You're going to see redness. You usually see the redness in the face. Why? Why do you usually see it in the face?
I have this. That's the part that's exposed to.
I think, yeah, because you can see it, but why else? What else about your face? At least my face, for sure. I mean, definitely paler people. What's with your face? Your skin and your face? No. The skin is very thin on your face. All right? The vessels are real, are high. Especially with, anybody, you can definitely see a redness. Okay, but those of us who are particularly... the Celtic race is horrible. We have like zero skin. And the blood vessels are really high, so you can see it right away. You see a red face, right? I mean, I work out, and people come up to me and say, are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. My face gets really red. Just don't even look at me. I can't tell you how many times I've had like aerobic instructors. You're all right? Yeah, please don't. Just all shows in my face, and my blood pressure goes up. And it's just, okay? So you're going to see redness. It's generally in the face because that's where the skin is thin and there's a lot of vasculature. redness is caused by vasodilation. All right, the vessels dilate. Vasodilation means increasing the lumen of the vessel. Okay, just to remind you, vasodilation, remember they're tubes, they're going to get bigger. Right? And that's going to cause an increase in blood flow, because that's what we want, the blood flow, an increase in blood flow moving around. Swelling is a result of the vasodilation making the inflamed tissue look bigger. Right? Got that? And pain. It's generally a result of many molecules accumulating in an area and then putting pressure on a nerve. And that's often where the pain comes from. All the molecules are going there, they're grouping and they're pushing on a nerve, and that's causing pain. So what are some causes of inflammation? Infection, we talked about that, right? We talked about infection. Infection can cause inflammation. Injury can cause, foreign bodies all can cause inflammation. It's a response. So what do? Eliminate the stimulus. So if you have a splinter, if you leave that splinter, it's going to have bacteria probably in it. It's going to invade the bloodstream, you're going to have an infection, right? But immediately, you may have some inflammation. Redness, swelling. So you can pull it out. You remove the stimulus, haven't you? You can also fight it with antibiotics. You're removing the stimulus. You can arrest the disease. Like if you have a cold, you're going to arrest it. You're going to take care of it. Your immune system's going to fight it. It's gone. Or the disease is going to progress. You're going to have even more inflammation as a response to the infection or the disease state. Here's a couple, if you have a good background in cell and molecular biology and want to look at this a little bit, that's great. If not, forget it. It's fine. There's some different pathways of inflammation, chronic and immune. So what happens when the body's defenses do not respond appropriately? What happens then? You get some hypersensitivities. When the immune system does harm to the body by way of an exaggerated immune response, an exaggerated response leads to inflammation and cell injuries. Hypersensitivities. Okay? Autoimmune diseases are examples of hypersensitivities. Autoimmune diseases, lupus, Crohn's, some arthritises, okay? Where the body sees a normal antigen as something that isn't foreign. And reacts to itself. It's an autoimmune disease. And you'll see many of them. And you'll learn more about the next semester. Allergies, for sure, right? We all, many of us who have allergies know about that. Our body's just overreacting to the acacia trees out there yet again. And there's coughing and sneezing, and because we've had so much exposure to them, we can't take anymore, and we start reacting. So, inappropriate response is mediated by the allergen. How much are you getting? Okay. My son's horribly allergic to his cat, but he adores his cat, and he's fine. The cat comes in and out of the house until he goes and picks it up and hugs the cat, and then he's like, sneezing, coughing, sneezing. Okay? Because picking it up and holding it is just very much. So he has tremendous exposure. He has a problem. And you're the same way, those of you who are allergic. You've seen allergic people, right? You know how they are. And there's some genetic foundation to this as well. There's different types of hypersensitivity. Yes?
So yeah, sure. You were saying that allergies basically mostly are like when the body exposes them so much, they
Yes. You have to have some exposure in order to build up the antigens and then have the over-response.
Okay,
so if you've never been never had an exposure, supposedly you can't get them.
Okay.
That's the theory.
That would be someone who's just born with like so many allergies and they have
the propensity for
okay.
The propensity. Yeah. You would still need the exposure.
Oh, okay.
All right. I have a lovely story actually that goes along.
Okay.
my older thing, the acid, was a horrible mess of a baby. Also it's an allergic person. And I took to the pediatrician, and he says, well, it can't be allergies. He's a newborn. He hasn't had exposure. Wait, no, listen. It was a food. He said, he's not, I said, Dad. And he goes, yeah, this is what we see with people that eat too many tomatoes or too many mushrooms. He couldn't have it. And I said, oh, yeah, good, because I just had it. I was just, that's what I just ate. And he's only breastfed. And the doctor went, no, that doesn't come through, does not. Okay? So he had the propensity, and as soon as he started having that substance in my breast milk, he started inhibiting. Okay, so he was born with a genetic predisposition as soon as he got even in that minute.
Even in something
tiny. Exactly.
Is everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They were born with a propensity as soon as they get exposed to it, and no matter how. With Dr. Vincent Paul's, it's obviously not.
Yeah.
Here he's showing the signs, and I ate it. I can tell you, I ate them whatever it was. So he thought it was a trick. So, yeah, he came with a genetic predisposition. So, good question. And some people are just hypersensitive, they come with that. But in theory, there must be an exposure. That's why the doctor says it's impossible. Well, I said, no, he has had it, an exposure. And then the question is, okay, when does that exposure come? Does it come prenatally? I mean, how far back can you go? Did that exposure happen in utero? Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very hard to say, okay, exactly when did that happen? And I'm sure there are scientists who are looking at it now. Like at that point, 21 years ago, he didn't believe it could pass through breast milk. Well, I did. And I, you know, that was pretty slam dunk to me. But there's a lot questioning what exposures are happening in utero, too. And so you would think that someone was born with it. Well, they were born with it. But, okay, they were already exposed. So, yeah, that's real dicey.
Okay.
But, yes, in general, you must have an exposure before in order to have the antigens in order to overreact. Got it? Have you had any background in different types of hypersensitivity reaction? No. Have you had any background in types of hyper? Yeah?
Yes.
A little bit?
Poison.
Poison.
I know, it's just extreme reactions.
Okay. There are four major kinds. Anaphylaxis, cytotoxic, immune, and a delayed reaction. You may see any of these in your patients. So anaphylactic hypersensitivity is seen in 20%. You must have previous exposure to the antigen. Good example is a patient I have who was a construction worker, and he got bit by a fire ant, all right? He went into anaphylactic shock. He came into the hospital. I was caring for him, and I said, are you going to change professions or something, or what are you going to do? And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, you get bit by the ant again, it's going to kill you. He goes, what? And I said, you've been bit by this ant before. And he goes, oh, yeah, a couple years ago I was. It wasn't too bad, you know. It kind of swelled up and it went away. This time, his buddies brought him in. He barely lived. I said, next time, you're not going to even have that much of a chance. He's like, really? No one stopped to talk to him about this horrible anaphylactic reaction he was having to these fire ants. So this is the kind of thing where the nurse can step in, because what is the physician's doing? They're keeping him alive. They're not thinking that maybe this guy's going to have to change jobs. Well, he didn't like hearing that from me at all. And I said, go talk to your physician about it. You ought to, this is a serious thing. Because next time you might not be alive. Okay? Must have previous exposure, often in response to environmental allergies, and this is all we see. Okay? Dilation of blood vessels, increased capillary permeability, constriction of bronchial airways. This is where it's bad. This is the scary part. I had a patient that had a severe reaction. Can I tell you about the patient? A severe reaction to an antibiotic that was home? Yeah, it was really bad. That's why when you hang or give a patient a new drug, you stay with them. Anything that's at all complex, it's just vancomycin. The nurse hung the vancomycin for the first time, walked out of the room. It's dripping into her. She just had time to pull her phone and say, "Ah!" But luckily, the unit clerk was on it. Said, "There's a problem." Came in. Yeah, she was going into anaphylactic shock from the vancomycin, just like that. Because it can happen really quick, and her airway was constricting, and she wasn't breathing. She lived, thank goodness, because the unit clerk was on it, and she could reach for the phone. The nurse should have stayed there. So you really don't know if your patient's going to have a reaction to a medication. You're putting an IV. That's why IVs are so scary. You don't get them back. They're there. She went to the ICU. Yes, she lived, because they were able to open her airway, keep her breathing, and let it go out, run its course. Put a lot of water diluted, and yeah. and keep her breathing while she went through this. Okay, so that's type 1 anaphylactic. Mm-hmm. We give epinephrine for this. We give antihistamines, some other things. Prophylactic treatment. Yeah, stay away from these fire ants, all right, or whatever it may be. Type 2, cytotoxic. We see this in blood transfusions. Okay, cytotoxic reactions. Often in blood transfusions. The destruction of the host cells. Okay. Sometimes in transplant rejections, that kind of thing. Now, immune complex. This is something that people get 4 to 6 hours after exposure. Tissue death and hemorrhage. Examples can be some rheumatoid arthritis, some viral hepatitis, some syphilis lesions, some leprosy. I don't know if I've ever seen an immunocomplex reaction. It's much more rare in our practices. But you could very well see a cytotoxic from a blood transfusion. And you will see a type 1. Okay. And delayed hypersensitivity. It's not an antibody. This is different. This is cell-mediated. Commonly, chickenpox, herpes, measles, smallpox. And latex allergies. What about those? Anybody have one that they know of? Something like that. No. Yeah.
I had a dystonic
reaction. What? Dystonic. That's something to do with the muscle thing?
No.
What is?
Yeah.
It was a
medication for
So is it delayed? Ooh.
What was that from?
I have no idea. It was a delayed reaction.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I have no idea.
No.
Or maybe it was something, it wasn't like a Bell's palsy, it wasn't something like
that. I was
taking
a radar.
Good thing. That would be a good clinical problem.
Yeah.
And research and teach us about it. Mm. Yeah. That'd be great. No, I haven't. Probably because some trials are gone.
Maybe it was something.
Maybe
it was something.
Maybe they called it an allergic reaction, a hypersensitive? Oh, it is allergic. Okay. I don't really know where that would be, if that fit. It was delayed, for sure. I don't know if that would be considered a type 4. We'd have to look at this at the microscopically and see if it probably was cell-mediated, if it was neurologic. But it was longer than 72 hours. She has a pharmacist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure it was very weird and very scary, right? Yeah. Latex, let's go back to latex. 10 to 17% of healthcare workers, because we're exposed. Again, when you're exposed, you have more of an opportunity to have an allergy. Only 1 to 3% of the population. Luckily, today in the hospital, most everything is latex free. Most everything. So it's not as much of a problem as it was when I started practice 11 years ago. But still be wary, you will see people with latex allergies, and we are careful. Cutaneous exposures mean to the skin, mucous membranes, inhalation, often anything with latex. So you have to be extremely careful if you're caring for a patient with a latex allergy. Now, there are other allergies that may come up, which are kind of interesting in a hospital. You may have, your person may have a horrible rash, a skin rash, for example. Okay, you think, God, what is this? A skin rash, yeah, they can be allergic to the soap in the bed. And they have this dermatitis all across the top of their back. You know, that again, it's the nurse that figures it out. Okay, so be aware that there might be something in the hospital environment that's bothering your patient. And again, we're doing the exams, we're doing the assessment, it's up to us. Then we have to order hypoallergenic sheets. And that's not at all uncommon. So be watchful of all these concerns that could be there for your patients.